This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue-collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue-collar workers for blue-collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off.
We're leaving today and entering a world of Mickey Mouse waving, princess meeting and greeting, lightsaber clashing, the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror dropping, banshee flying, space mountain launching, galaxy rewinding, what is the whole network galaxy rewinding, fireworks igniting. World of other worlds. For whatever you love, infinite worlds await at the most magical place on Earth, Walt Disney World Resort.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
All right, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the How to Hunt Deer podcast. I am your host, Dan Johnson, and you've been on this podcast before, right, Pierce?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Back in the early days, man.
The early days of it.
Yeah. Nice. Back when Josh Raley was hosting. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're going to talk about deer hunting today, obviously, but before we get into today's episode, I want to talk a little bit about how men get swindled by their girlfriends and wives to bring wild animals into the house. What do you got on your lap right there, bud?
I've got probably a 5-week old kitten that's got a little snotty nose, a little eye infection. She's a sweetie though, but just sitting there looking awful helpless. And next thing you know, she went from my grandma's farm to my lap. So here we are.
Hey, I tell you what, at least it's not one of those kittens that's like truly feral, where they'll like scratch you and hiss and bite you, and you know, they've been raised around humans. So on one of the farms that I hunt, there is a group, like there's a ton of cats. I mean, we're talking probably 25, 30 cats. Every fall, there is a pregnant mom, multiple pregnant moms, and then they go in. There's one tomcat that looks like he's been just beat to shit his entire life. Like scars across his face, one blind eye, you know, like just the typical farm tomcat who probably bounces from farm to farm defending his territory.
And so somehow I take, like 40. Like.
Yeah, exactly. Right. His head's the size of a softball. The rest of his body's just like really doesn't even look healthy, you know?
No.
So this spring, right, there was a whole bunch of kittens on the farm. And we, you know, I pull into the there and I got to open a couple gates and all the cats come running out. And my daughter is just like, "Dad, please, please, can we take one home, please?" And I'm just like, I look at them and they got that, that gunk in their eyes. And they just look like if you touch them, you're going to get like some kind of cat disease. Right. And I'm just like, maybe these aren't the best cats to rescue because they're already half dead. Right. They're literally just farm cats that I don't, I doubt the farmer even feeds them. They, they live off birds and mice. That's it. Or maybe even each
grasshoppers.
Grasshoppers. I have no idea, but, I have yet to get swindled, but I think as they get old enough, they are definitely going to probably win. And I'm going to have one in my truck. One that can see would be nice.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, how did you get that one in your truck?
We're going to, I was sitting there talking to grandma and then all of a sudden I look out the window and my girlfriend's holding this thing and cradling it and like petting this thing and it's like leaning into her. And I was like, all right,
it's over.
Like at least it's a, like a nice cat. You know what I mean? Yeah. Cause this isn't of course the first cat that we've rescued. Like outside of her work, a couple of years ago, she had a mama cat with a couple of kittens and it was like right before one of those really bad, like 40 below cold snaps we were going to get. And I get a call on the way home one day and she's like, "Hey, so we've got 3 cats now. Remember those ones that were outside living in the retaining wall outside of work? Yeah, they're at home now. They're in the garage." So,
yeah,
but they were wily. They were like the ones that you're talking about were like not very well mannered, not very personable, but now they're, you know, that was 2 years ago and, now they're little sweeties, but
yeah,
I like that we're a couple of dudes on a hunting podcast, kicking this thing off, talking about kittens.
Kittens. Oh, we got to show, we kind of got to show our softer side, right?
Exactly.
My mom, so she lives out of town, probably like if you were going to dump a pet and just say, "Well, I've had enough of this animal," they live at the perfect distance from 2 towns. And then it's right on the county line. So they get animals dumped on the side road all the time.
Oh, no.
I mean, all the time. So they've had 2 dogs. One got hit by a car, disappeared. The one that they have now, several years ago, it got dropped off during turkey season. So we named her Strutter because that's the name of, you know, it's the turkey season. And then multiple cats have been dropped off and have eventually, like, they're, you know, farm cats, like ate a rat or ate a mouse that probably had already digested mouse poison or got hit by a car or a hawk got it or a coyote got, you know, a fox got to it or whatever. And so, so it's like the perfect drop off place for all these wild animals. So every year a handful of animals get dropped off and then if they want them, they keep them. If not, if they kept everything, they'd be a zoo there.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? But they'll take it into the county shelter house or whatever. And at least they've done their due diligence. Like I can remember one time we had a cat and I would come back home for college in the summertime, and it was when I came home, started pissing on my bed, pissing on my clothes. And I was like, well, that's not going to work. So one day I put it in the car. I drove it out into the middle of the country, this old abandoned farmhouse, and dropped it off. And then I left. Right. And so then the next thing you know, there, it, like 2 years later, I drive by the same abandoned farm and there's like 30 cats all in this abandoned farm. And I'm like, I wonder if my one cat, like the one that I dropped off, sparked this population
this
increase.
Tribe, yeah.
Yeah, this tribe. So I don't know.
Crazy. They're like mosquitoes. I know. They just pop up.
Right. All right. We should probably start talking about deer hunting here.
Yes, sir. But
before we get going, I do have to send a huge shout out to the partners of the How to Hunt Deer podcast. And the first one is Code Blue Scents. Code Blues, man, they've been around for a while and they offer a variety of real and synthetic deer lures and attractants and scents. One thing that I've wanted to mess around with a little bit is they got like a tarsal gland in a bag. It's almost like reusable. You can hang it from like a licking branch and get that scent in the air. Mm-hmm. I feel like that would pair well with a mock scrape. They offer the Rope-A-Dope mock scrape kit that comes with the rack rub and a blue rope that you hang from the tree. You put the scent on it, you create your mock scrape. I've had good luck with that in the past. Something to get deer to come in and investigate, even if they aren't, you know, even if they aren't coming to the scrape and making a scrape, they're still coming to investigate it. And then a variety of scent elimination products as well. Go check out codebluescents.com and enter the discount code HTH20 for 20% off. Next on the list is Muddy has a new apparel line. And if you go to Muddy, if you go to gomuddy.com and check out their apparel and footwear category, they have something called the DV8. And it is basically, it comes in a variety of different patterns like Bottomland, which is all that old camo. The popularity of it seems to be coming back. And back and back.
Oh, yeah.
You know how fashion kind of works. It was popular. Now it wasn't. And then it comes back again. And now, so check out the DV8 Ambush line. They have a variety of shorts, shirts, pants. They have some heavier jackets and hoodies and things like that. The cool part about it is it looks like it has everything you need from base layers to mid layers to shells to keep you warm in all types of different temperatures, you know, from the cold rut mornings all the way to the hot rut mornings, depending on where you live. So go to gomuddy.com/products/categories/apparel and footwear. If you just type in DV8, it'll take you right there. So go check out that and go buy some. Looks pretty cool. I think I'm going to have to pick up at least a pair of pants because my pair of bottoms got ripped this year when I slipped out of a tree stand and the peg caught my pants and ripped it. Luckily, I had a safety harness on, so make sure a lineman's belt. So I got
those pegs are so sketchy.
Oh, dude, especially
so sketchy.
Especially if you are on a kind of a crooked tree, mm-hmm. and you're trying to balance your, you know, and it's wet. So like what happened was I crossed a creek and got mud on my boots. So I'm setting this up and I have to step on the left-hand side at some point, but the left-hand side was kind of angling down a little bit. So when I put my pressure, it slid my boot right off.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so I climbed up, so I slipped down a rung and it hurt like a son of a bitch. I still have a permanent scar when I get a suntan on mm-hmm. my inside of my leg where you can see it, man. It's gnarly. So be careful out there. Wear your safety harness, wear your deal. All right. Early season. When does Wisconsin start?
This coming Saturday, dude. September 13th.
Are you ready for it?
No. No. I'm ready to get out there. I'm mentally ready. I am, from a hunt preparation standpoint, very, very much unready. Yeah. But, you know, I usually kick the season off. So my folks, I grew up on a little 5-acre farm that is perfectly positioned between ag fields at the mouth of a draw and has a trout stream down in the bottom. And it's got a couple of apple trees throughout that mouth of the draw. So there's just like there's an abundance of food and it's just a big travel corridor. So it's really good that first or second week of the season, really after like before the first two or three maybe hunts of the year. It's really good then before the deer figure out what's going on. And then it's a great pre-rut and rut spot. So I usually try and get out there first opening weekend or so and smack a doe just to fill the freezer and kind of get that worry out of my mind. But that's usually the extent of it. Late season doe hunts and stuff, that's about it.
So right now, and it's crazy because here, like, you live in Northeast Iowa. I'm living in this east central part of Iowa, and we haven't had sustainable rain for a while.
And No, dude.
Yeah. So, I mean, early part of August was pretty wet. July was wet. June was wet. And so we had all this really good rain, and now it stopped, which I don't know what the forecast is looking like, but if it remains dry, leaves and vegetation are going to start dying off at a good clip, which is good kind of for us when it comes to hunters and being able to see through the woods and get up in trees a little higher up. But whoa, unprofessional. But I want to talk a little bit about vegetation and how to hunt in thick vegetation, where to put the tree stands in like the vegetation and whatnot, because I feel like you have to change you definitely have to change your approach to getting into the woods this time of year versus, you know, the first week in November where a lot of the vegetation is off the trees.
For sure. Yeah.
All right. So what's the first step? What's the difference between, let's just say, I don't know, do we start with access?
Yeah.
Let's start with access. What's the difference between a November access route and a September access route?
September's a heck of a lot harder, man. I think November, if you're on public, if you're on private, you've probably had a couple of hunts under your belt already at that point, right? And so, you know, by November, that trail off the parking lot is probably pretty worn down. Which at that point in the year, I am kind of keying off of that to figure out where people are and aren't going. You know, I'm looking for boot tracks a lot of times, you know, that point in the year, figure out, okay, where's the area that's going to be the least pressured. Early season though, dude, it's kind of a blank canvas. I've honestly been doing a lot of scouting right now to try and figure out, where those early season rubs are and stuff, ahead of time. And I think you can kind of avoid the thick, nasty foliage to an extent if you're choosing your properties carefully. Like if you've got a mature growth forest and stuff, like a lot of big wood settings where that canopy is still really thick, the understory for the most part, I was on an oak flat last week that we could have played catch with a baseball in there for 60-70 yards, but I know that's not the case for all properties. And so I've got a couple of, last year I chased a big buck down on a river bottom property that was, just a viney, leafy, nettly, it's a swamp pretty much, just a hellhole. And so like, obviously when you've got moisture factored in, which this property still does, your access becomes more and more limited. So a lot of times I'll still wear, usually just knee high boots are good enough, but this year I'm going to try. I had a guide client of mine who had some like $40 Frog Togs Farm and Fleet hip waders. And I'm super jealous of those things because I would not be afraid to beat the hell out of those and, get in. And they would also keep the nettle needles out of my legs. So I'd be really stoked about that. I think early season though, like when it is thick, your timing of your hunt is going to come into play a heck of a lot, like especially if you're trying to get close to a bed, because when it is thick you have to get close to that bed or get close to the staging area, whatever you got, so you can kind of stage hunt your way back there and get closer and closer and closer. But you're going to make a lot of noise, especially when they do bed in those thick, nasty areas in early season, especially September. If you don't have a field edge to go to, they're probably going to be in that nasty stuff. And then if you want to see them in daylight, you're going to have to get pretty darn close to them. So timing your hunt, and you know, whether it be if you're going to go into a morning, like getting in there super, super early, which then you're going in the dark. So it's not always the easiest, but if you're, you know, going in the afternoon, you better really take your time, which I think is probably the better strategy in a lot of cases. You know, we always talk about like, you know, mornings are no good, you know, early season, which I've shot a lot of does in the morning on opening day. But, you know, I think being able to go in the light and see what's going on, see the sticks that you're about to step on, try and like be, at least be able to give yourself some sort of an advantage to see what's going on through that thick, nasty mess is going to be a better option to at least get in tight if you need to.
Right, right. The thing, here's the thing about, and I like this part of it, because when it comes to access, you can get away with a little bit more in thick cover, right? But if it's really dry and it's loud, that's the downfall, right? If you're getting caught on, you know, thorns, or you're having to walk through all this vegetation, the leaves are rustling and you're making noise, that's the big negative. But there's a lot of times where if I do decide to go in, and let's say I'm doing a run and gun early season because I have some trail camera intel that there's some type of deer movement in this area, I am using all of that cover to get closer I'm still doing the same thing. Like I'm still dropping in as low as possible, but let's say I think they're bedded on a point of a ridge inside the timber, and my gut tells me they're working this ridge up to maybe some ag or a pasture, or there's a oak tree somewhere producing, you know, whatever the food source is that you've identified. And I'm able to get a little bit closer, because once all of that vegetation comes off, you know, they might be able to, you know, just turn their head and see you come, for sure, come down the ridge or come up the angle. You know, I start low and I take a 90 degree turn. I walk straight uphill and I'll set up on a trail that leads to the point of that ridge. And so it allows you to get pretty creative with your access routes if there is a ton of cover. And so hunting from the ground might be an option if you feel like you can get away with that. At the same time, deer, there's a lot of that vegetation there that are slowing deer down on the way to the destination food source, so that they can just like browse the whole way, you know, to the destination food source. So having that vegetation on the ground, I really think it allows you to get closer, and it slows down deer movement to the final destination, the field edges. And so that it's like two, like one good thing, one bad thing, right? Totally. So it kind of weighs, you know, it balances itself out as far as, you know, early season. But I'll tell you this. You get in one of these spots where the vegetation is thick, the deer feel comfortable in it, and your wind is right. And we'll talk about wind and thermals here a little bit. But man, you do that, it will completely take deer off guard, and they won't even know you're there. Especially if you have a stand that maybe you pre-hung in March, where it had all summer to sit, and they're sitting at the tip of this ridge, and you're just thinking, hey, dude, something's here. I have trail camera proof of it, or there's a big trail that's jumping a fence up at the top of the ridge where it connects with a pasture. And dude, those can be some really dynamite spots if you've prepped for it, or you're really quiet in a run and gun.
Absolutely, dude. And that's the emphasis on the quiet and the run and gun thing. Cause I'm sitting here kicking myself for not having a couple of these spots prepped already, for that exact reason. But yeah, dude, you hit it on the head, man, especially early season. Like they haven't seen a lot of pressure, hopefully, you know, maybe depending on where you're at. Like I know I talked to a lot of guys in Southeast Wisconsin, and like just the pressure is absolutely ridiculous over there in those marshes. And you know, you walk in, you see 20 cell cams, you know, on a hub scrape and stuff, and like, yeah, those deer, but you know, I've talked to a lot of those guys. They'd figured out, they're like, okay, once you find that cluster of cameras, then you just figure out where the deer bumped off 50 to 100 yards and what their secondary route is, because they're still in there. They're still doing all the same stuff. But
they're
like
just
you
doing
said,
it
man.
At
like,
night.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly.
Yeah.
But they're just, yeah.
Let's see here. So the access routes are good. Okay. Mm-hmm. So now let's say we get in there, we're getting ready to set up on a tree. What do we need to know with thicker vegetation in the trees and on the ground, what that means for our saddle and or tree stand placement?
Man, I think you can get away with hunting a lot lower when you've got all that foliage.
Mm-hmm.
Like you've got,
you almost have to.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. If you start getting up, and I usually try and hunt to first cover, you know, even throughout the year, you know, I don't like to get up into those thin branches too much. And I like to kind of try and at least put my hips at the first big joint of the tree. Usually, a lot of times when there's foliage and leaves and stuff on the tree, man, it's like even a touch lower than that or a couple feet lower than that. Just because once I am up into that fork, if I've got branches around me, if there's other stuff that I need to, you know, pull out of the way. So I think early season, especially with foliage, carrying some like paracord or gear ties or, you know, whatever wire or something like that. Just so if you need to pull leaves or branches out of the way and you can't cut them in your state, do it. Otherwise, I mean, I don't think there's any rules on cutting vines or cutting, you know, anything like that. So, I mean, I'd carry a pair of pruners with you. It wouldn't be a bad idea, I would say, for just getting those dangly things out of your face.
And that's one of those things where you gotta know.
Totally.
Because back in the day when I started hunting Iowa public, I didn't know that rule. And then some guy was like, dude, you can't cut trees in Iowa. And I was like, really? And so I went and I looked at the research, and of course you can't. You're not in certain states. Trimming trees for shooting lanes is a big no-no. Even screwing a bow hook or a screw-in step in a tree is a big no-no, right?
Yep.
Especially if you leave it there. And so it becomes like you got to hunt below the cover, or you're going to be tying off branches or trimming trees, like especially on public ground or a private ground. If I'm doing a run and gun and I set up, there's been times where I've set up in the dark and I try not to do that anymore. You set up in the, oh, dude, it is the perfect spot. And it was the perfect spot. But guess what? I had no shooting lanes where the deer were coming in until they were literally right on top of me. And sometimes that's okay, but at least I want to know what's coming visually, what's coming. And the vegetation there, it's great, because more than likely you have a really good backdrop behind you, right? You're probably not as skylined as much as you would be in November, but at the same time, you get too high, and now you're fighting, trying to, you know, a deer could be right on top of you. I can remember one time I was chasing a really big deer, and it was like that for some reason there had not been a frost yet. So the leaves were still on the tree. It was like October 18th or something like that, maybe a little early. And I was in the tree. I set up, you know, underneath of the cover, but I couldn't see very far. And then of course I'm down in this little pinch point, and I'm literally sitting in my tree, and there's a 150 inch buck, maybe 15 yards. He just crept in right behind me, and I didn't see him until I looked down, and there he was. And so you got to be ready. And of course my dumb ass passed that buck, 'cause I was after a bigger buck that year, but it can happen. They can surprise you. So you have to be aware. And I think that would be a really good spot for a saddle. You kind of put the tree between you and where the expected deer movement is. So from the deer's perspective, they look at a tree and they may see a hand move, but not the whole body, right? Because you have a tree that's blocking you. And then when it comes time, you can creep around the tree and draw. And that might be an option as far as a setup is concerned. But man, vegetation I mean, so far, basically what we've said, it has a ton of positives, but it also has some negatives that you have to keep an eye out for.
Mm-hmm. Well, dude, yeah. What you just said there too about that 150 that just snuck in on you. Like, I mean, even when the leaves are off and it's, you know, it could be early December, you know, it's dry as a bone. Everything is dead and, you know, crusted over and everything. Like, those deer still creep in on you then. Like when the ground is still soft and there's, you know, the leaves are still supple and, you know, have moisture in them and everything too. And they're not crunchy. Like, dude, mm-hmm. those deer are just ghosts. Like,
yeah.
You have to be off your phone and like,
yeah.
just have your head on a swivel and be watching for that. Cause a lot of times all you see is that little, like just that little dark patch
yep.
creeping through all the leaves. And I mean,
or an antler turn. Like yep. You're just kind of glancing, you're just looking, you don't see anything because you're not focused on any movement. And then you see like a head turn and it's just an antler rotating. And you're like, yep. holy shit, he is close. I can't even believe how many times I've gotten busted because I've had deer come in behind me that went unnoticed. Just yep. tons. It's like, you know what is the scariest thing is when you're sitting there really relaxed watching a squirrel or a bird. Or hell, you could be scrolling on your phone or some dumbass thing like that. And then just a doe glowing at like 5 feet. You're just like, oh! Did you shit your pants? Yeah, okay.
It's so, weird how that sound will make like the hair on the back of your neck stand up. Like in the wrong scenario, it's like, ooh, I really fucked up there.
And then you just want to start launching blind arrows into the woods to try. It's like the movie Predator. Where, you know, they're just shooting in the woods at nothing.
Yep.
Man, I feel like I want to do that every time a doe blows. Just, okay, you're going to blow. I'm going to just blind fire into the woods at you. So, okay. So anything else, any tips, tricks, as far as the setup is concerned that we need to be aware of with thicker vegetation?
I think, you know, planning access when you're, I'm just thinking about the spot, that oak flat that I was at last week. It's kind of off of a small river system. There's a big drainage ditch that's probably about 6 feet deep. And so even in, you know, when all that vegetation is down and it's, you know, November and everything, all the grass is laid down and everything, I'm not going to be able to get as far in because I'm not going to have that additional 2 to 3 feet of cover above me with the tall grass and everything on either side. Mm-hmm. But like using the vegetation, kind of like you said earlier, like to your advantage to get in closer so that you are within, you know, when that deer does get up, you can see that antler move and you can see that, you watch him get out of his bed and walk into that oak flat. Like, yeah, it's, I don't know, man. It gets tough because it's, I found last year too, the sign and the sign reading gets really squirrely because there's like too many licking branches for them to, if they want to hit one and they want to make one, great. Like they can just do it. There's vines everywhere. There's little twigs everywhere. Obviously not every property's like that, but like I remember it kind of drove me nuts by the first week of November because I had 30 some scrapes in a line. And I was like, okay, like the only thing I can really make out of this is like that it's in a line and it's going this way. But I'm not going to hunt any of these until I find one that's actually being, you know, consistently hit. It's a little bit bigger because the rest of them were just, it was like they just got bored and they're like, oh, well, there's a perfect branch for it. Let me make that real quick. Yeah. And then 10 feet later, they do the same thing.
Yeah. And then they'd probably never get hit again. They're not.
Never.
It's not. Dude, yeah. It's never duplicate. Right. The only other thing that I will say is, let's say you just as, and this is a stand prepping 101. Mm-hmm. Let's say you go in March or April and you're like, I'm going to do my due diligence. I'm going to set up a stand in March and April, and I'm going to have it ready for, you know, late October when I come back in here the next time. Great. That's great. But you have had the whole summer of growing, right? And so that once pristine shooting lane that you've, you know, you set up and you've taken a lot of time to trim out this lane, there is a good chance that if you hunt that too early in October, there's going to be leaves that have grown down into it, which is actually a good thing that you've hunted that now. I would always bring some type of saw if you can, if you're allowed to trim. bring a saw with you the first sit in a stand, because, you know, you don't have to bring a stand in with you. You're just bringing your bow basically, and maybe some warmer clothes, maybe a water. Bring a pole saw with you so that if you're hunting that early October, now you've seen some summer growth come in and creep on in on those shooting lanes, or maybe you set it up and you didn't hunt it 1 year and then you come back and say, well, I have something here and it's not there. Well, I'll tell you this, you trim that up and I'll tell you, dude, then it's ready for November. So
absolutely,
always have like a pole saw or a hand saw or some type of device to get up in there and cut those lanes. Because I'll tell you this, I love running guns, man. I love creeping into a bedroom, setting up, you know, downwind of something and having the deer come in, you know, first time in, best time in. But there's also something about getting a stand set up in the summertime or springtime and having it 100% ready to go by the next, you know, by hunting season. And you don't have to do anything. You just, your hook's already in the tree. Your bow holder's already in the tree. The only thing you have to do is climb up, set up, hook up, and you're good. Right?
Yep.
That's fun. I mean, well, that's not, it's a different type of fun. It's like the easy type of fun where you're just like, wow, that wasn't so bad. Right?
Yep,
I didn't even break a sweat. I didn't even break a sweat. So
yeah, I didn't have to throw all my layers back on at the bottom of the tree. I could just I was cool as a cucumber. I could just climb right up. It's perfect. Yeah,
exactly.
Those are good. Those are great mental setups. You know what I mean? Like, just give yourself that little bit of a break, especially if you've been getting after it for, you know, a couple of weeks and you've hung 13 sets already. And you're like,
yeah,
all right, here we go again. Like,
yeah,
being able to scramble up is pretty freaking sweet.
You want to know what my problem is, dude? This is going to be embarrassing, but I got back in the day, I had a sponsorship with a tree stand company, right? So they sent me a whole bunch of tree stands. All right. And so then I would go out, I'd put them up, and then I'd leave them in the timber. And now I'm getting to the point where I don't remember all the places where I've put my tree stands. You know, that's one of those must be nice type of problems, right? Oh, must be nice to have so many tree stands that you can't even, you don't even remember where they're at, right? And so I'm just like, I got to this March or December after the season's over, I got to take a day and just go almost take all my tree stands down, throw them in the back of the truck and start over again, just so I have an inventory, just so I have everything that I need for that.
Totally. Dude, have you had any, let me ask you this on that note. Have you ever gone into one of your farms or one of your spots and been like, man, I haven't been in here for a minute. Like, I should climb up here. That spot looks good. And then you climb up and you got a preset there. Yeah.
Or what I've done is I got a spot where I'm just like, oh dude, I haven't been in here in a long time. I get in there. I set up without looking around, and I'm a full running gun setup. Four sticks and like 5 or 10 yards on the next tree is a full set that is also mine, where I'm like, I wish I would have known that. Like, yeah, I wish my dumbass would have remembered. And then of course I see it, then I remember setting it up, you know, so
whatever. Yeah, it's on the wrong side of the trail though for that wind.
Exactly. There you go. There you go. So now I have, dude, I do have a couple spots where I have like three tree stands within 20 yards of each other to hunt one pinch point on three different winds.
Dude, I like that.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
It's pretty badass. So, what else, dude? Okay. So we've talked about access. We've talked about setting up. The next thing I want to talk about is how vegetation affects wind and thermals.
Okay. Yes.
Kick it off.
Dude, it sucks. So it's, I mean, we talk about, and varies a little bit, obviously, depending on the terrain. You've got the hillier the terrain, especially if you've got, you know, like where we're at, kind of in the, I guess, the driftless part of the country, where you've got, you know, the Mississippi, the Wisconsin, some of these bigger systems in Iowa. Dude, it gets squirrely, right? Like, you've got all this
wind is swirling.
Yep. Your thermals are just a nightmare because you've got such a massive body of water that's flowing, that's pulling, you're just creating these big draws and thermal sucks and stuff like that. And so then, I mean, you're dealing with that. But then when you've got vegetation on top of it, you've got shady spots and you've got sunny spots. And that's where things really get hairy, because you can set up and you'll have that shady little back spot or whatever. And, you know, you won't be backlit at all. You'll have your profile be really nicely concealed and all that. But that sun comes up and, I mean, it could be a difference of 5 feet depending on where you're at in that tree. If you get hit by that sunlight first, your thermals might start rising up and you'll be, you know, more or less bulletproof for that spot. Factor in some wind direction though, especially like a kind of a lazy wind, like in that like 5 to 8 mile an hour wind, you know how it goes to blow and it's almost like somebody blowing out birthday candles where it like,
yeah,
where it's like it, yeah, it sucks back into your face and then blows, or it sucks back over your back of your neck and then blows into your face. And dude, it just gets squirrely, but you got to be dropping milkweed constantly, especially if you're in an area. If you're in somewhere that's like, it's all overcast and it's all shaded and everything, you don't have any light spots, great. Like you probably will have at least a more consistent thermal pull or wind direction. But if you get those kind of goofy areas where you're on an edge and it's shady behind you and then it's sunny out in front of you, you're hunting a little like clearing or something and then shady back behind it, like, dude, it gets so squirrely and you might not even know that you're spooking deer that are 200-300 yards away, because that you think that milkweed, you know, shoots up into the air in that clearing and then it reaches that other side of the clearing and then it just gets sucked right down in there and flies around in there. And like, if I'm going to hunt a consistently shady area, I want a stronger wind.
Yeah.
Because I want that to be at least consistent enough that it's going to clear me out. So something like 10, 15 mile an hour, like I want that. That's going to be pushing everything, kind of sweeping that area out. Because again, when that wind starts to kind of like waver and like load up before it actually blows or gusts or anything like that, I mean, dude, your thermals are already kind of falling to the ground and pooling a little bit.
Yeah.
And then you throw that into the mix and it's like spilling water on the, you know, on your kitchen counter and running your finger through it and just swirling it around. Like it gets crazy real fast.
Yeah.
What do you think? What did I miss?
No, that's you nailed it. Like, it's so hard to predict thermals, especially on a light wind day. Mm-hmm. And so the best day to hunt heavy vegetation would be like, I don't know, today. Today is a nonstop south wind all day long. Right. And yep. So if you can find those wind direction days where it's just straight winds the whole day and they're not going to be shifting around too much, that's great. No problem. But we also have this cloudy day, this thing where it's like it's going to be cloudy and then it's going to be sunny and then the shade. I mean, you can get in there, and if you're not, especially if you're hunting a specific deer, a specific buck, he comes in, let's say he comes in upwind of you, so it's perfect, right? But then the wind's not blowing hard enough, and then the clouds come over, your thermals shift long enough to come in and go down, right? It's the middle of the day. Your thermals are pulling down because it's cloudy out, and it's not warm. You know, we're in this time of year where the mornings are cool, the afternoons are hot, and then when the sun goes down, it starts to cool off again. If you're in one of those primetime periods where the thermals are shifting and it's cloudy outside, holy shit. Like, you want to talk about something that gets me annoyed is when you get into the perfect spot and then there's no consistency in what mm-hmm. your scent's doing, right? And you're just like, God, well, I hope he doesn't bust me. I hope, you know, right. I hope I don't get busted. So,
dude, and having the discipline to, like, if you do get into that spot and it sucks and your wind is swirling, like it's doing anything where it starts creeping over the top, you know, the back of your neck or whatever, dude, just get out of there. Like, yeah, early season, because in 3 weeks when all the leaves are off of that and that spot's sunny again and it's getting, you know, full light, there's no shady, it's all just consistent sun aside from the shadows of the tree trunks, dude, you might be able to go back in there and it's bulletproof.
Yeah, amen. That's a great point. The other thing now is, let's just talk about wind direction for a second, because I think of thermals, I think of like slow pulls down or slow pulls up, but with wind direction, it's a little bit different. With all the vegetation on the trees, the wind starts to blow, and it's, you know, it's just like it hits the leaves and it's like a dishwasher, right? So the vegetation is causing resistance against the wind, and that scent cone isn't as defined as what it would be if all of the vegetation is off the trees. Like, your scent blowing through a bunch of twigs and sticks and trees is different than it hitting a tree and just disrupting everything. Like, if you were to, watch someone smoke a cigarette and then they just blow it out of their mouth, that's great. But let's say they smoke a cigarette and they blow it onto, I don't know, their hand. That smoke kind of goes everywhere.
Yep.
As aside from just this one straight line of smoke, right? That's what it's like with no vegetation on the trees and bushes. Add that vegetation on, it's just a bigger scent cone. My guess is that if anything, there's no edge really. It just becomes like a giant circle that gets pushed away. So I would want to make sure that if I'm doing that, I'm probably on the downwind side of wind so that my wind is pulling to a lower elevation instead of a higher elevation, because then it's going to meet the terrain and thermals aren't going to be able to play as big of a role. And it's just going to be dishwasher type scenario there. So again, it's like, and here's the deal. We are going way overkill on this conversation, I think, from it like, oh my God, do this, but don't do this, but do this, but mm-hmm. don't do this. You know, watch out for this, but don't worry about that. You know, it's like, yep. It's like, get out there and hunt first and foremost, learn it, like make your mistake if you need to, but then come back. Like, I would, if you're not prepared for the season, I would rather have you guys go in to a spot that you're not comfortable with, see how it lays right now, get a stand up in that area, leave it alone, and then come back when it gets really good.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
I don't know.
Or, I mean, if you're a mobile guy, like if your season opens, you know, like ours on Saturday, if you're scouting somewhere, you're checking out a new property, like keep that stand on your back, keep that bow with you. And when you do get in there, you do find something hot and fresh, like especially if like early season rubs, if you find that, like, figure right out how now. To set up on it right now.
Right now.
Right now. Don't hang a stand and come back tomorrow.
No. Nope.
Do it right now and plan to hunt tonight. Like, figure that out and figure out how you can set up in that moment to capitalize that on that opportunity. Because I think on the thermal note, and kind of like you said, with all that vegetation creating that dishwasher effect, vegetation, it also holds a lot of humidity, right?
All right.
And that humidity traps scent. And then that, like, I've never really given that a whole lot of thought until this year, I guess, with like the level of humidity and what that does for your scent, how it holds it, makes it like kind of stick to everything. Yep. And I think it's a lot easier. Like you said, you can, rather than having a scent cone, it kind of sticks to everything. And then I think that's why those deer get wigged out as much, because it's like it smells that much fresher, that much longer. The scent is more displaced. They're kind of like, whoa, what the hell happened here? Like,
On a bigger scale, you can almost look at it like the wildfire smoke that was creeping into the United States.
Yeah.
Right. And the humidity was holding it closer to the ground. And just imagine the different levels of air, right? So the tree, everything from the canopy to the forest floor is also going to have a different, I don't know, structure of air than from the top of the trees and up, right? That's all going to be warm up top, but then anything down is going to be cool and probably sink. As the leaves come off, there's going to be a period where you're going to have parts that are hot, parts that are cold, you know, this and that. Then you're going to also, once the leaves are off, you're going to benefit from all of that stuff. But at the same time, here's the negative part. The leaves fall off and it's not as thick. So the deer transition to different areas where it is thicker and they feel more comfortable at less wide open timber and things like that. So just, I guess, something to keep, you know, keep in your head as you guys start to go into your seasons. A lot of places are opening up this week. Wisconsin is one of them this weekend. Iowa doesn't start until October 1st, but most of the time, October 1st is still heavy vegetation unless we get like really cold weather. We get our first frosts. We start to get a lot of wind and storms that knock all that stuff down. But somewhere around that October 20th, maybe even a little later, somewhere between the 20th, 28th, I'm guessing somewhere in there, pray for a big frost, pray for a big storm, knock all that stuff down. Hopefully all the crops by then in your area or are out. The corn is out. The soybeans are out, right? The farmers are kind of done with the ag. There's probably going to be some pressure from agriculture, or while the temperatures are still nice, to do maybe some logging even or some mowing. They're probably, if you hunt in cattle country, start to expect rotational patterns for grazing into different pastures, pulling them out, putting them in. You know, the corn and the beans come down in Iowa. What goes into those fields? Hogs or cattle, right? And so sometimes that will play a role in deer movement. Sometimes it won't. Be observant is what I'm saying. So
absolutely. Well, dude, and like you said on the not to circle back and hammer on this thermal note too much, but like just the difference that a sunny day versus an overcast day or a humid day versus that high pressure day, like that it can make or break a spot.
Yep. Absolutely. But don't be afraid to get in there and try it. Mm-hmm. Man, I tell you what, I am glad Iowa does not have a September opener. Yeah, but at the same time, well, just because I feel like a lot of deer are still on that summer pattern, potentially, right? There's a lot of deer that could potentially be in that, you know, they could be in that bed to food pattern really well. I know that the Iowa youth season starts not this weekend, but next weekend.
Yeah.
So I'm going to get out there and I'm going to be taking advantage of that bed to food pattern. I just really hope that the deer are still in that. First deer shows up, my son's going to pull the trigger on it and he's going to be happy with it, right? And so I'm trying to find that pattern for my kids. I just don't feel like I would want to go hunt that myself because I feel like it could potentially be easy pickings for certain deer real early. And I don't want that to change for Iowa.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. Yeah. Cause October, everyone, I don't know. There's something to be said for starting your season during or just before the October lull. I do get that. Yeah. It keeps a lot of deer alive.
If you believe in the lull, I don't believe in the lull.
Yeah, dude, all this stuff we're saying about like, be careful and like, you know, you can do this, but not so much that you're going to like screw things up or whatever. Yeah. At the same time, like go in, blow it up, like figure things out and then like adapt after that. You know what I mean? It's just going to make you a better hunter. And like once you figure out how to hunt in any scenario, then, okay, I've got an afternoon off of work. I could squeeze a couple hours in and you're not sitting there trying to like hammer on a stand that you should be saving for November 2nd when, you know, just because that's the only one that you have prepped or the only one that you're comfortable hunting. Like,
right.
Especially hey, let me ask opening you, week, dude, just send it like,
blow it up right away.
Blow it up. We got 3 months later, like the deer will show back up.
Let me ask you this. Okay. Do you feel that I don't want to say industry, but the people who have podcasts and television shows, and maybe writers or like the content that you personally have consumed over the years, do you think that they are like, talk to me about, how do I even ask this question? But it's about bumping deer and putting pressure on a property. Like, do you think deer rebound earlier and go back to a pattern or a place quicker than people expect? Like, I grew up in an era where if you bumped a deer, you were screwed and you never were going to see that buck again. And maybe that's true, but I've also bumped deer and seen them the same day, right?
Right.
And, same day or next day. So what are your thoughts on that?
Dude, I think we have reached a level of saturation in the outdoor space. Sorry, I'm going to get this little bastard off me. Just getting squirrely. I think we've reached a level of saturation in the outdoor space of especially like, I was talking to a guy about it yesterday. Like there's so much information out there right now and there's so much stuff on there about, you know, the minutia that it's so easy to psych yourself out and think that something's ruined or, you know, it puts doubt in your mind because you might have 80% of your setup correct, but 20% it's like iffy. You're like, well, I don't know. I don't have this confirmation. Well, okay, that's fine. You've got 80% of it. So rather than holding off and like staying out of the woods and, you know, not doing something because you don't have that thing, or like, I don't know, I was talking to a guy about it yesterday about shooting your bow and like how your form has to be perfect and your peep has to do this. And if you do any sort of like slap with the trigger finger, like you're screwed. You're never going to kill a deer if you're not grouping in a 2-inch group at 20 yards and a 4-inch group at 40 and all that sort of stuff. And it's like, I feel like a lot of folks, and I'm guilty of it, you know, a couple of years ago, like I totally psyched myself out because I was like, man, I'm not shooting well enough to like kill a deer. And I had a great deer come out and I like backstrapped him. And like, you know, and part of it was, you know, yeah, I did have some target panic and all that. But like, it's so easy to psych yourself out. And there's every reason out there in the industry not to do something that I think people would just become overall better hunters if they just did it anyways and figured it out and like learned and adapted and stuff like that. But like, dude, there's so many articles, so many YouTube videos, so many things over the last decade that have like, here's what not to do. Don't do this. Don't pressure him. Don't go in too early. Don't do X, Y, Z, or else if that buck gets bumped, he's gone. Like he's never coming back. And, that I think it's just a total fallacy. Like there's no way that's true, because I mean bucks have home ranges. As they get older, the home range gets smaller, and like they bed in these areas as they get older for a reason, right? And it's because they can detect danger and they can escape it. If they you know, just because a coyote runs through or a hunter runs through and they, you know that hunter's there or that person's there, like obviously don't badger it, don't pressure that buck overly and like, you know, shove him out of there and make him want to leave. But if he bumps or like busts you once, it probably just means that his bed worked and he's going to come back and he's going to use it again.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think we all bump more deer than we know that we do, just with ground scent and with, you know, like I said, like you get that weird thermal play where all of a sudden this deer, you know, you might spook a deer that's 300 yards away and have no idea that, I mean, how many times have we seen just a white tail without a blow or anything? You know what I mean?
Yep.
So it's just.
Yep. That's a fact. Well, get out there, hunt, have fun. Good luck to all the people who have September openers coming up, especially in Wisconsin. And I think like some of the southeastern states have some September openers. Good luck out there. Be safe. Wear your safety harness. Pierce, man, are you getting out this weekend to take advantage of the opener?
Dude, I'm going to try. I've got a guide trip on Saturday and Sunday, and so I'm trying to figure out how much I'm going to hate my life if I shoot a doe Saturday night and then have to turn around first thing in the morning after processing that thing and go guide again on Sunday. So I'm trying to figure that out. At the very least, I'm going to get out on Monday for sure. Probably on
that's
some
guide
public
fishing and, guide, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Fishing guide. Yep.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Some of that. But
well,
I'm going to send it on Monday for sure into this public and just blow it up.
Blow it all out. Never see another deer, right? Ruin it for yourself and everybody.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly. If I can't get that buck, nobody can. Yeah.
Nobody can. All right, my friend. Well, hey, have a good one. And we'll talk to you when we talk to you.
Yes, sir. Appreciate it.
Right now, get up to 20% off select online storage solutions. Put heavy-duty HDX totes to good use, protecting what's important to you. The solid, impact-resistant design prevents cracking, and the clear base and sides make items easy to find, even when the totes are stacked. Find select online shelving and tote storage up to 20% off at The Home Depot. to organize every room in your home, from your garage to your attic. Visit HomeDepot.com. How doers get more done.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.